All right, we are ready for 2 John. We did some reading in 2 John on Sunday, and we're going to read this short book again, and then we'll start doing some investigative work tonight as we go through this book. Let's go to God in prayer. Our great God and Father in heaven, we come before you and we're thankful for this day. We're thankful that we can be here and we can open your word. We can read it and we can just continue reading over and over again. And we know that we won't be able to understand every single thing all at once, and it may take years. But we pray that each time that we open your word, that we will delve deep into it, and that we will have open hearts, open minds, and that we would have humility as we search, that you will open our eyes to things that maybe we haven't seen before. May we not be afraid of new things that we find, but may we search them diligently and carefully. Be with us tonight as we study through 2 John, as we study this book for the next few class periods. We pray that you will help us to learn much into what John was writing to these recipients, and may we learn as they learned, and may we apply these things to our lives as they did. In Christ's name, amen. All right, so we are in 2 John, and let's go ahead and just read this, and then we will talk about this first step. I will go ahead and ask you all, we've been through this a few times. Every time in 1st and 2nd Peter we did this, and did it in 1st John as well. So I'll go ahead and ask you, what are the, I kind of take this inductive Bible study approach to looking at the text. And so what would be those three main parts of studying a book of the Bible? I think I heard that whispered somewhere, maybe, I don't know. Okay, so yeah, so you're looking, so that, she said the greeting, the body, salutation, all that, what would that entail? Where do you?
Observation.
So there's three steps. There's observation, interpretation, and application, right? So on the observation step, we're just simply going through and we are looking at what the text says, right? Not trying to interpret anything about it. We're reading it and looking at all the different nuggets that we can find in there and just jotting them down as we go along. You can ask, when you find something interesting, you ask yourself, oh, I wonder what that means. But don't answer that yet. Just give it some time and we'll get to the interpretation part of that. But really just ask, what does the text say? And that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to read through it. And as we're reading it, ask yourself that question, jot down some things as we're going along. It really just answers a lot of information about the people, the author, historical times, chronology, events, things like that. And that's what we want to jot down. Interpretation is just, again, what the author intended for the recipient to get out of the letter originally. What did it mean to the original recipients? And then, of course, application, after we've done that, now we can apply it to ourselves, okay? So we're going to go ahead and just read through. I know that's a small print. I didn't realize it was going to be like that when I put that together. So you live and learn. But hopefully you have a Bible handy and or an iPhone, iPad or something. And let's go ahead and read 2 John together again, and then we'll start observing the text. 2 John 1, the elder to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all who know the truth, because of the truth that abides in us and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace will be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Father's Son, in truth and love. I rejoice greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we were commanded by the Father. And now I ask you, dear lady, not as though I were writing you a new commandment, but the one we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk according to His commandments. This is the commandment, just as you have heard from the beginning, so that you should walk in it. For many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. Such a one is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch yourselves, so that you may not lose what we have worked for, but may win a full reward. Everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not deceive him, don't deceive him either. Do not receive him into your house or give him any greeting. For whoever greets him takes part in his wicked works. Though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face, so that our joy may be complete. The children of your elect sister greet you. All right, so we're going to go ahead and start looking through this. And we're going to look at this observation step. And the first thing that we typically do when you read a book of the Bible, any book really, you pay attention to the characters that are in a book. Look at the people that are mentioned. And so right off the bat, specifically, who is mentioned in this book? And it may not be specifically by name, but they may be introduced in a different way. Okay? All right. So we have the author here, who is this elder. It says the elder. You see that here in verse 1. So, and it kind of maybe do a little bit of a thought-provoking question here about that. We're not necessarily going to interpret it right now, but you could be thinking about, what does that mean, the elder? You don't see that too often. And we'll talk about that more when we start the interpretation phase. But it could mean a couple of things. Obviously, when you see elder, you think about an elder that is in the church, who is an overseer or a shepherd. Or it simply could just be one who is older in age, right? So he could be just referring to himself as older than these brethren here that he's writing to. So those are a couple different ways to think about that. One thing we do notice in 2 John, because there's only 13 verses, so there's not just a ton of autobiographical information to be found in this book. All right, there's a little bit, but not a whole lot, because it's such a small book. But what else is said about the author? Okay, so if you drop down to verse 4, he explains his feelings for this church. He says, I rejoiced greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we were commanded by the Father. All right, so he feels very close to them. He rejoices over them because they're walking in truth. Look at verse 8. What do you see there? What can we learn about the author? Gene? Okay. Okay, so he gives a warning and tells them not to lose sight of what you already have. But does he speak to them in terms of you? He says we, right? He includes himself in this. So he says, watch out, or watch yourselves, so that you may not lose what we have worked for, but may win a full reward. Okay, so he includes himself in this, which could suggest some kind of relationship that he has with him. Yeah, David? Okay. Yep. So, and that, and if that's the case, then that would mean as we're interpreting the text that we need to start looking at, maybe look, go back and look at the earlier manuscripts and see what actually, what could be meant by that. So some include the we, some don't. So, and you'll see that at least one more time in this text, there's going to be a section. I'm not going to give it away right now, but there's a section here that's italicized in the New American Standard, but not in the English Standard Version. And that's partly because there's a translational difference in the Greek. So, yeah, but that's exactly what you have to do. You have to start thinking, okay, I need to jot that down, and let's come back to that and research that when we get to the interpretation phase. Yes? That, yeah, that's what David was saying, that there's some of the earlier manuscripts don't include, it swaps the we for the you. So, yep, it just depends on your translation. So that's something you want to consider, jot down, and remember to go back and research a little bit. But very good, very good. Let's see here. What about at the end of the letter? What does the author have to say? Or what are we told about him? Say that again. You have to say it one more time. Okay, and what verse are you looking at? Verse 13. Okay, so the children of your elect sister greet you. Okay, so... he calls them his children, okay, so that's another indication that there's there seems to be some kind of relationship here that's important. What about in verse 12? Okay, very good. So at the end of the letter, he says, I'd rather not write to you. I want to see you face to face. I'd rather be able to converse with you than have to write something to you. And that's, you know, in our day and time, that would be like, I'd rather not have to call you and talk to you on the phone. I would just meet and talk face to face, right? So that's kind of, yeah, I think that's exactly right. So he's not here present with them. He'd rather be with them in person. Any other thoughts on the author before we... Did you all notice anything else? That's about all I had. Okay. Yeah, so, and that's what we're going to look at next, or in just a moment, is we've just looked at the author and things that are said about him, and then we're going to look at recipients, and then we'll look at others who are mentioned, and I think you're exactly right, David. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yep, and we'll look at that a little bit. When we studied 1 John, we wanted to look at 1 John with the Gospel of John in mind, because there's so much of what Jesus teaches, John also teaches these recipients. And you're going to see that some here in 2 John as well. So yeah, he's teaching what he's heard. It seems like he's teaching what he's heard from Jesus Christ. So very good. All right, so what about in terms of the recipients? How are they identified? Okay, so Yeah, this is kind of interesting, right? So here in verse 1, it's the elect lady and her children. And so remember, this is not the interpretation phase, so we're not ready to just explain or try to figure out what that means. But we do want to jot down a point about that, and it may start making your mind wonder a little bit, you know, has this ever happened before in the Bible? Or maybe does God reference his people as a woman any other time? And so there are definitely some possibilities to think about there as to what that actually means. Obviously, the Old Testament, God deals with his people in terms of a woman, in terms of a bride. So you want to keep that in mind and jot that down to go back to and maybe find some references as to where God does that. And, of course, you know, this could be, maybe he's talking about a specific lady and her children. Maybe that could be. He's written, there's in the New Testament, there's some personal letters that are written to some individuals. Philemon would be one of those, even though he does include some of the people that worship there as well later on. So it could mean, it could just be an individual that he's specifically writing to, or it could be a church that he's writing to. So either one of those are some possibilities, and we want to, you know, again, keep those in mind. And just remember, just go back to the Old Testament and do a little bit of research there, and the New Testament as well, because God's people are often personified as women with children from time to time. And so there's a precedent for that. Is there any other reference besides verse 1? To these recipients. Verse 4. Okay. Yeah, I rejoice greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we were commanded by the Father. So there's again another reference to this lady and her children. You'll see in verse 13, the children of your elect sister greet you. All right, so there's, and then kind of getting into some other people that are mentioned here as well. But yeah, so I think you have, you know, this, you have a sister and children, you have this lady and her children. So think about that and think about what possibly that could mean. Is it a flesh and blood sister that we're talking about, or are these brethren or churches that he's referring to? I also want to look back at verse 4 for just a moment. What's John say about her children? Okay, some of your children walking in the truth. So that's kind of that. What kind of question might that make you raise? Okay, yep, that would be the first question I'd have, right, is if he says that some of you are walking in the truth, maybe that indicates that or implies that some aren't. Maybe most of you are, but there are some among you who aren't, right? So that's something to think about. Okay. Yeah, it could connect with verse 9. Everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. So there he's mentioning some who wouldn't be in Christ and some who would be. So yeah, maybe there's a connection there between verse 4 and verse 9. So, but again, you see, that's a question you have to think about, because that's going to lead you to an interpretation of what maybe he's trying to get across. And so, is it some of the children walking in the truth, or is it generic? Is it a generic sense of the word? You know, it's kind of like saying, Shane Scott always does this a lot. That's a mighty fine preaching. He does that a lot. So, is he emphasizing that some of the time the preaching's fine, or is there an emphasis on fine and good preaching? See what I'm saying? So in that sense, it would be a generic sense that, no, the preaching's good. It's really good. So we have to look at that and see what he's actually talking about. Is it generic or specific to get across a point? And that actually, I think, is the text where, is the New American Standard italicized there? It is, okay. So that's where, again, if it's italicized, you're probably going to want to go do some research and see if that is in the Greek manuscripts or not. And that'll help you decide, as well as looking at the context. All right, so what about other people? And David already mentioned one. Okay, so, yep, so verse 13, the children of your elect sister greet you. So there's some others who are greeting this lady and her children. Very good. What about in verse 7? Okay, so we have some deceivers here that don't hold to the truth. Regarding what? Yep, Jesus Christ in the flesh. Okay? So we're going to have to spend some time thinking about what that means. You know, who are these deceivers? And what is it that they don't hold true specifically? And so that will be an interpretation step that we'll have to look at as well. In verse 9, what do these people do? He warns against some who may do what? Yep, he warns against those who don't abide in God, right? Who don't abide to the teaching of Christ. And that's another phrase that we're going to have to work through, right? Is he talking about, specifically, is he talking about teaching Christ? What Christ gave in terms of what he gave to the apostles for the apostles to teach to these recipients? Or is it a specific message or truth about Christ himself? And again, we're not quite ready to investigate that much further. We're just trying to pinpoint some of these things just in the observation step. But keep those things in mind. And remember that these people here that he's writing to have left whatever it is deceivers are all about. They've left all that behind. They're not there. They're abiding in truth. They're abiding in Christ. All right. Any places, events, dates, timeline, anything like that that you saw? Your silence means everything. I didn't find anything. I would have thought, you know, when I was reading through this, when he talked about how he wanted to write, he didn't want to write to them, he wanted to see them face to face, that maybe there would have been something like, I will be here soon. Sometimes you see that in some of the epistles, but he doesn't do that here. So, yeah, we really don't have anything to go on as far as anything like soon, quickly, shortly. There's not really a mention of any of that I found. All right, so the next thing that we would do then, after we've jotted down all these people, looked at whatever places or timelines, historical events, things like that, we would want to get a little bit more specific and maybe look at some ideas that are present in the book. And so you're looking at some of the W questions, like when, what, where, why, things like that. So what terms or ideas are mentioned a lot in this book? And before we do that, I want us to go back and remind ourselves of the terms that are mentioned a lot in 1 John. So somebody start listing off some of the terms and ideas that came up so much in the book of 1 John. Light? Did you say, I just gave one away. Love. Okay, yep, love comes up a lot, right? All right, and then light, of course. So he talks about walking in light, walking in love, because God is love and God walks in the, or God is light. All right, he talks about sin. All right, what else? Truth. Big one, right? He talks about truth and specifically the truth about who Jesus Christ is. And what else? Any other terms? Okay, so specifically their relationship with Christ is that they abide in Him, right? That comes up a lot, especially at the in the second half of the book of 1 John. So, abiding, loving one another, what's another specific issue he raises in 1 John? The Antichrist, that comes up a lot, right? So, as we think about those terms and ideas that come up in 1 John, as we're reading 2 John and observing it, you're probably finding out, oh, there's a lot of similarities here, right? You could probably almost put 1 John over 2 John, and you're going to come up with the same ideas and terms and focuses. And so that should cause us to think about some questions that we'll look at here. So what might that tell us about this letter of 2 John? What might that tell us? Okay, it could be written about the same time. He could be just, part of it may be that he's dealing with the same issue, right? So in 1 John, he's dealing with this Antichrist that's come along, and they're teaching something different from what Jesus taught about himself. And specifically as to what that means, there's some questions about whether it's Gnosticism or whether it's these Jewish believers who had turned away from God and don't believe anymore. Nonetheless, that is a specific issue he was dealing with, and he was telling them how to live as that was going on. And so we come to 2 John, and if a lot of the same themes and ideas are coming up, well, maybe he's still dealing with this same issue a little bit. So that's something that we want to think about, and we'll have to start interpreting as we study the text a little bit more in depth. Something else he does in 1 John that he also does in 2 John is he refers to them as children. So in 1 John, he refers to them as little children, and then, of course, here, the elect lady and her children. He warns them to be on guard as well, right, in 1 John, and he does that here in 2 John. So I want to get a little bit more specific, and I want us to think about it. I put this up here. Hopefully this will be helpful to you. But I want us to look specifically at some things that he does in 1 John that he also does in 2 John. So if you look here at verse 2 of 2 John, because of the truth that abides in us and will be with us forever. So he talks about abiding. In verse 5, I'm writing you a new commandment. I'm not writing you a new commandment, but the one we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. So love comes up. And then in verse 7, he's going to deal with these deceivers or this Antichrist, so to speak. And so let's look at how these ideas interact with the first book. First of all, here in verse 5, and now I ask you, dear lady, not as though I were writing you a new commandment, but the one we had from the beginning, that we love one another. All right, so let's go over to 1 John chapter 2. It's almost like he's plagiarizing or something. 1 John chapter 2. Can you plagiarize yourself? All right, so 1 John chapter 2, verse 7. Beloved, I am writing you no new commandment, but an old commandment that you had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word that you have heard. At the same time, it is a new commandment that I am writing to you, which is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. All right? So he talks about it's an old and a new commandment, but it's something that you've had from the beginning. And we get to 2 John, and he does the exact same thing. He reminds these people that there is a commandment that they've always known about. It's old, and yet, at the same time, it is new. What about in 2 John here in verse 1? Verse 3. How does he refer to Jesus? All right, Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father. Okay, do I have that right? That should be verse 3, not verse 1. I'm sorry. Yeah, so let's go back to 1 John chapter 1. First John chapter 1 and verse 3. That which we have seen and heard, we proclaim also to you, so that you too may have fellowship with us. And indeed, our fellowship is with the Father and with His Son, Jesus Christ. So as he introduces Jesus at the introduction of both books, he does it very much the same way. This is Jesus, who is the Son of the Father. Back here in 2 John, looking at verse 9, what's said about these individuals that go on ahead? Okay, so everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. And then notice, whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. So let's flip on back to 1 John chapter 2. Look at verse 23. No one who denies the Son has the Father. Whoever confesses the Son has the Father also. You see that? So again, he mentions a few different ways in which he mentions a way you can have the Father and a way in which you don't have the Father. And he does that again as he writes the second letter. What about this author's feelings in 2 John 12? We've mentioned this already, but what are his feelings like? What's it lead to? Okay, his hope is to be with them. Okay, and yep, and so and keep going. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face, so that what? Our joy may be complete. Right. So flip on back to 1 John chapter 1, and look at verse 4. We are writing these things so that our joy may be complete. See that? So. This has to do with his relationship to them, but also, I think, in a spiritual sense, what this common bond is supposed to produce. It's supposed to produce and complete joy with each other. All right, so I'll put that up there because I want us to see, while this is a very small book, there is a ton of material in 2 John that is the exact same as what he wrote in 1 John. There's a lot of strong similarities between these two letters. And then, of course, you have the Antichrist in 1 John 4:2, where he talks about not confessing Jesus in the flesh. And he's going to deal with that here in 2 John verse 7, about those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. So there's another similarity. All right, so we've looked at the similarities between the books. So what's different? So is there any new material or anything that's different in style that you see in 2 John that's not in 1 John? Okay, so 2 John is more personal. And really, the best way to describe this is that he really is, it's really written just like most other New Testament epistles, right? It's your, if you're looking at how to write an epistle or a letter that you find in the New Testament, 2 John would be a good one to do that with, because he talks, he introduces himself, he introduces the recipients, he has a love towards them, and then he ends with kind of a salutation. So 1 John's different. It is. It's not really, a lot of commentators actually suggest that 1 John is a sermon. And as really, you know, when it gets down to it, 1 John, he doesn't beat around the bush. He gets right to the preaching. And he teaches them exactly what he's afraid is going to happen and what they need to do to stay away from it. So, yeah, there, I think that's right. I think there's a difference in the style or the approach in which he is writing.
Uh-huh. There would be directives come out from the Admiral, whoever the Admiral was, the authority, whoever that was. They cover all these points, the point of the operation was that they was the writing points. So we did all these paragraphs and sub-paragraphs and a lot of military jargon that didn't make any sense to anybody, didn't know what it was about. But it was all insider information put together in a very ordered way. If you go back to the court, you got the calculation, you needed to know exactly what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you had an operation underway and there was a situation somewhere, say there was a submarine approaching your convoy, it would come out a message, it went straight to that point. Who is wrong? Who is going to? And it, this is the business, this, you know, this is how we can react to it. But I kind of have a see a relationship with what you're going to do in that way. Whereas,
okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at that. So you're saying that 1 John, maybe he's kind of generalizing the things, the points that he wants them to keep in mind, and then maybe 2 John, he is specific in a situation that's taking place, and he can use those points back in 1 John and reiterate them in 2 John. Yeah. Maybe that could be. That's a good thought. Yeah.
Just more generally, if we're not going to take this may be jumping ahead, so I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
If we're not going to take the alleged lady here metaphorically as a church,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is interesting. I do think you do have a situation in 1 Peter at the end of 1 Peter where he talks about the lady who's in Babylon. So, you know, but I think you're right. It is a little bit, this is unique from the other epistles, in the sense that he doesn't really address them at the opening of a letter like that. In 2 Peter or 1 Peter was the only other one I could think of in the New Testament where maybe he's, and even then I would suggest that in 1 Peter that he's not being specific with a person in mind. Here you could read this and think maybe he does have somebody in mind specifically. So. I think that's a good thought, and that's something, you know, you want to look at and investigate some more. Let's see here. Yeah, and then, yeah, so here's the other thing that he mentions in 2 John that's not really in 1 John. So remember in 1 John, these antichrists or whoever this is that doesn't believe in Jesus, they were among them, but they went out from them. And he deals with how they are to respond in terms of their faith, but he doesn't specifically mention how they are to interact with those people. Here in 2 John, he gets a little bit more specific as to what their attitude, this lady and her children are to have towards these unbelievers. And specifically, they're not to be hospitable to them. So that's a little bit of a nuance you see in 2 John that wasn't in 1 John. All right, the last thing I'll just mention here, bell's getting ready to ring. But you do have this interpretive issue that comes up in 2 John as to who these deceivers are. And I'm just going to throw out the two options. We've done this already in 1 John, and I'll just mention them again. But these deceivers, who are they? And so we have to start thinking about that as we get ready to start interpreting the book. It could be that these are... these deceivers are people who have let this Greek philosophy infiltrate their mind, and so they have, in some way, they have come around to this this form of Gnosticism that was rampant at one point in time and in history. Or he could be talking about the Jews or Christians who at one time believed, but then reverted back and don't believe in that Jesus Christ came in the flesh. And so, and that the second view here is probably, it's not as common. It's a newer belief that people have as to who he's writing to. What I would mention about that is it doesn't change the overall message of the letter, whichever you look at that. And so I would just keep that in mind. We looked at 1 John in terms of, not in terms of Gnosticism, but in terms of these Jewish unbelievers. And Jesus talks about some of those in his gospel. So maybe that's who it is, maybe it's not. At the end of the day, it doesn't change the message of what he's trying to get across. You still are told who they are, what they're doing, and what you need to do in return. And that you need to be on guard. All right, so... that's really, I just wanted us to at least notice and appreciate that you could really take 1 John and 2 John, and they really kind of overlap each other. And so I think that's kind of cool. It kind of makes you think, well, maybe, you know, like David said, maybe he's reiterating a point, but maybe he had to. Maybe there's a specific situation that happened once those people left them, who were among them but left, maybe something else happened. And to some of those Christians, and this is how you deal with that. Sure, absolutely. Right, absolutely. It doesn't matter which way you look at that, you can gain a lesson. That's right. Yep, that's exactly right. Very good. All right, guys. Thank you.